My name is Jack Swearingen. It's my honor to chair such a session. The reason that I'm up here is because I'm older than ASA. Many of you are not, but some of you might be. Also, I apologize to the honored speakers for my wearing shorts. That's too informal for the dignity of this occasion. Nevertheless, please don't take it personally. I just wanted to be comfortable. So our talks are half hour each, including Q&A and changeovers. So I will stand up and give you gentle signals when you have 5 minutes to go if you're still talking. Everybody understand that? Our first speaker is Emmy Ruppel. Did I say it right? She is the editor of the God and Nature magazine, which some of you contribute to and many of you read. She, in fact, does this mostly by internet, since she's a student, a PhD student at the University of Pittsburgh. But the internet allows us to be many places, just like quantum mechanics. So, Emily, it's all you.
It's all very quantum. Hi, everyone, and thank you for coming to this session today, making it over here to our lovely chapel. My name's Emily, as Jack just said, and I'm the editor of God and Nature. I was delighted to learn that there would be a special session on the evolution of the ASA at this special annual meeting, because even though it's a relatively young publication, God and Nature magazine has gone through quite a few big transformations in its existence. And as outlined in this talk, I'll just talk a little bit about how the magazine serves the function of providing sort of a middle tier of access to ASA-relevant scholarship through popular articles and essays on special topics in science and faith, and how we came to be offering these types of resources. But I first want to just say a little bit about how I came to be involved with the ASA and some of the twists and turns that have led to me being up here in front of you fine people. The project started as a humble blog, and in what I have come to consider a providential turn of events, the founder of this new blog in 2011 was looking for contributors at the same time I was completing a degree in science writing at MIT. Tom Burnett happened to go to church with my sister Nancy in Washington, D.C. And although Nancy had moved to Haiti for work at this time, she still enjoyed receiving some of the social emails of her friends back home. When she forwarded me a general interest message from Tom announcing the need for help with this new venture he was calling God and Nature, she noted the keywords science, Christian, and writing, and I was just over the moon because I had discovered the ASA totally by accident, and at a pretty crucial time because faith and science seemed to be moving farther and farther away from each other in my mind the longer and longer I spent in the hyper-atheistic science writing community. A few weeks later, at the AAAS annual meeting, I met some old ASA stalwarts, including Randy Isaac, at several Dozer events. And a few weeks after that, Tom Burnett announced that he had a new fancy job with the National Academy of Sciences. So since he was going on to greener pastures, he needed someone to take over the editorial responsibilities of the blog. And a few weeks after that, I took a train ride from my little apartment in Cambridge up to Ipswich, MA, where the ASA office was, to talk with Randy, who was then the director of the ASA. And within about an hour of mulling over really needed improvements to the ASA website and some of their social media outreach and general communications, Randy all but offered me a job. Now, he knew he needed council approval, but there was just this moment of synergy that was really just wonderful and surprising. And this was at the exact time in my MIT program when I was eagerly looking for such an offer. I was surprised, too, because I had expected to extend my help improving the communications of the ASA, which I already knew was a great organization, so that it could be a little bit more attractive to young people in science and religion, or who were Christians in science, or people like me that didn't even know you could really focus on things like that. I expected to extend my help as on kind of an ad hoc volunteer basis, because I know what it's like to be in a nonprofit and to have no money. But at this particular time, the ASA had a surplus of cash from an anonymous donation, about enough for 2 years contract at a starting salary for our communications officer. This story might seem to be tangentially related to the topic of my talk today, which is reintroducing God and Nature magazine, but I really think it couldn't be more important because it's just in these uncanny connections and serendipities of timing that we can feel and know God's presence in the world and our lives. And my journey to involvement with the ASA has been one of the more poignant times in my life when things just seem to be falling into place, not by my own force of will, and certainly not by accident. Our first project with the organization, with me at the kind of helm of this made-up position, was overhauling the ASA website. But soon after that, we turned our attention to the God and Nature blog, which we hoped to be able to turn into a substantial enough project that it might attract some interest, and you guessed it, funding from the John Templeton Foundation, which could help secure my future with the ASA after my contract ended. We had some early encouragement from the folks at Templeton, but in a turn of events that will probably be vexingly familiar to a few of us here, our proposal was not ultimately successful. The magazine project went on anyway, because with or without Templeton padded pockets, it truly seemed to be a worthy goal to create something that could situate itself in between the content of the ASA newsletter and its academic journal, PSCF. We hoped this new creation would be something people could read in their spare time and enjoy, something visitors could discover to kind of get to know the ASA. And the content of God and Nature magazine would be especially inviting, we hope, to a younger demographic of seminary and grad students, as well as early career researchers, not too basic as to be entry level, but more invitational than some of ASA's more scholarly publications. Now, because we knew that there were already many excellent resources out there offering material on creation and evolution, we focused this piece primarily on publishing articles that seemed to us to be beyond the origins controversy. We hoped to provide folks with a place to write about topics in science and religion that were interesting and relevant and timely, but which might otherwise be missed because of the juggernaut nature of the creation evolution debates, including, for instance, questions about neuroscience and the soul, which is topic of our conference today, biotechnology and resource stewardship. I have had a lot of growing pains as an editor and have so far implemented a lot of great ideas for this magazine that ultimately weren't such great ideas. And I'll spare us all the history of these starts and stops because the important thing to emphasize about God and Nature, not God and Nature magazine today, is that I do think it's matured tremendously over the past few years, even though I'm only doing the project on a kind of contractual freelance basis now that I'm back in school. And it's really found its identity as a publication that offers not just conversation beyond the origins controversy, but also conversation on special topics in science and Christian faith. Now, this turn to focusing on special topics, the way that it happened, reminds me of something my old poetry professor used to say. Fred Smock had this brilliant way of giving feedback on a truly bad poem that didn't make you feel like a failure. He would say, I like it. I'm just not sure that this is what your poem really wants to be. And The way this particular maturation occurred was a bit of reverse engineering, if I'm using that term even remotely right. I was advertising so many issues of the magazine as special editions that finally, after several special editions in a row, and it is a very special publication, but I realized, maybe that's actually what this magazine has wanted to be all along. So that's when we started sort of transforming the focus and making it particularly about these umbrella topics that people could contribute and write about in whatever way they desired. And at this point, I just want to take a quick look at what I mean by that and how the special topics work in a creative way that lends itself to some interpretation so that folks from almost any discipline can read these calls for submission, and with a little effort, see themselves invited to contribute in some way, whether you're a scientist, whether you're a theologian, whether you're a searching believer that doesn't have any training whatsoever who can write a personal reflection. We're trying to just, like, be a little bit open with this. So I'm going to read the topic for the upcoming issue on flesh and blood, just to give you a sense of what that means. Actually, you all have probably been reading this behind my back, so I'm just going to scroll down here and read something different so that you can get a sense of what's coming up also. The topic on race and inheritance, the call for submission here is genetic heritability, cultural heritage, white Jesus, black Jesus. Along with our DNA, each of us has inherited certain religious understandings and traditions, certain economic resources or obstacles, certain family traits and foibles that arise separately from our genetics. The social and material conditions of our birth affect how human beings mate with each other, where we live or migrate, and how we treat each other both personally and as a part of a larger social system. Given the important nature of the topic, how can Christians come to talk more productively about issues of race and inheritance? What do Christians inheriting privilege owe chronically oppressed and underserved populations, especially those their ancestors have directly abused or mistreated? What might a radical redistribution of wealth do for cultural relationships and the idea of Christian charity? In an age of science and technology, how do biological notions of evolution and population ecology serve us or mislead us about the responsibilities we have towards preserving difference and diversity, especially in the face of unavoidable niche deterioration? What basic facts of existence have the sciences illuminated over the past few hundred years that were wholly absent from our pre-modern religious fathers' and mothers' notions of Christian identity? What popular or traditional ideas in the church should change on account of these realizations, if any? And what does it mean to be a member of the global body of Christ? As you can see, these are somewhat more complex topics than just chemistry and religion or astronomy and Christianity. And so it allows folks to give themselves permission, I think, to interpret the topic in whatever way they like. And also, let me see where I was here. So in clustering the content by special topics rather than publishing solitary articles in random fashion throughout the year, we now can offer a kind of unique forum to help our writers and readers think about timely and complex questions through several lenses at once. Explorations by leading scientists and theologians are placed alongside personal reflections from students and lay people, all of which are interspersed with more contemplative material like poetry and photo essays. And this structure, I think, mirrors the tone of conversations at in-person ASA and CSCA gatherings, where many views are represented but none are chosen as correct, and every person's voice and worldview, no matter how inexpert or inexperienced, can inform and challenge the opinions of even the most accomplished scholars. I think God and Nature at this point really does provide a good conversational model and resource for young ASAers and is a good way to introduce the organization to outsiders. And people do read it, which is amazing and kind of surprising because you never quite know what's going on with the internet and all the traffic and the distractions these days. A few numbers that might be helpful. The number of annual page views for God and Nature magazine, the last time I checked, had risen from 148,000 to 211,000 in the past year, which is an over 60% increase, even though on my part, my actions to promote the magazine to outsiders through social media and through ASA, the ASA network itself, have actually been reduced on account of my responsibilities with school. So that's really encouraging and hopefully will make some of you want to, you know, write for us for free. So I do have some goals about the magazine. I would love to have more oversight and direction from ASA members in terms of the editorial content. We still don't have any sort of steering committee or implemented editorial board that can help bounce topics around and make sure that this that what's going on in the magazine is in the best interest of ASA and what people really want. So stay tuned for that, and if you do have any ideas, please send them along to me or Vicky or Leslie. And we're hoping to do more cross-promotion with ASA sister organizations, more promotion in general. We're hoping to develop some educational resources, including study guides and questions for youth group leaders and teachers that might come across the magazine. which hopefully will be really good material for conversation about science and religion because there are so many angles presented on each topic. Bill Newsom mentioned racial issues and looking around the room yesterday when he was talking about issues of race and diversity was an embodied reminder that the voices of minority writers and scholars are currently very underrepresented in God and Nature and in ASA itself. And I'll be focusing hopefully a lot of attention in the next few years on increasing the demographic diversity of God and Nature authorship because I do think this magazine is a good place to feature thinkers who might not see their views and interests represented right now in ASA proper. One more thing before I close today. I want to turn to a topic that is very near and dear to my heart and very relevant to today's talk. I want to discuss Walt and Ginny Hearn. Walt, I can't even begin to explain to the people gathered here today how much your support has meant to me over the past 4.5 years. So it is probably better to show you how much I've been lying to you in the past month. This is actually the topic of the summer issue of God and Nature magazine. It's called Love, Epistles, and the Stewardship of Words. And it's a festschrift for you and Ginny. We're sorry that Ginny couldn't be here right now. But you have been such an important person in the development of this magazine and in ASA for so many years. And everybody recognizes it. And everybody knows the name Walt Hearn, who has been around the ASA longer than the handful of years that I've been around. And I'll just go ahead and read you from a couple of the things I've written for this magazine, because it means a lot to me. So many people helped with this, and I actually have a notebook of letters to give you from various contributors who couldn't do a full piece for this particular publication. Many of our returned readers will recognize Walt Hearn's name from the many wonderful essays he has written for this magazine from its very first online edition. Walt has been a beloved member of the American Scientific Affiliation for over 50 years and was the ASA newsletter editor for over 20 of them. To claim that Walt has a unique style of writing would be a sizable understatement, and to say that his contributions to the ASA have been substantial would be another. Behind the scenes, Walt's in-house editor and chucklemeter provider, Ginny Hearn, helps Walt craft and correct the writings that have made the Hearn name fond and familiar to so many ASAers through the years, including many who have never met the intrepid pair in person. Walt and Ginny's love for language comes through in all their writings, so it seems appropriate that when honoring their work and generosity, such an act would take the form of a festschrift, a small volume of literary writings dedicated to a person of letters. That's what this edition of God and Nature magazine hopes to be. But more than a vessel for thanks and remembrances, the contributions herein hope to speak to greater truths, especially to the idea that without language, we would have no faith and indeed no science. In order to be known and shared, the truths of science and religion must be communicated, and this communication can take many forms. Sometimes attempts to communicate take the straightforward shape of simple statements and equations, eschewing abstraction and decoration. The plain style has its place, but more experiential forms of writing where readers are invited to dwell on the sound of rhythmic or alliterative phrases, to endear themselves to the splendors of a metaphor well turned, these types of communicative acts can inspire both understanding and inspiration. The humble joys of making sentences that stir the soul is what calls many writers to their craft, and readers will find no better example than that of Walt Hearn, who once upon a time fell so in love with words and a certain vivacious editor of the female variety that he turned from a successful career in laboratory science to spend more time with them. Please join us in thanking these two irreplaceable people of God by reading a few essays and poems that endeavor to capture and communicate something of the spirit that has made them so extraordinary and beloved. In the Episcopal churches of my youth, we sang a song that begins, "I sing a song of the saints of God, patient and brave and true, who toiled and fought and lived and died for the Lord they loved and knew. And one was a doctor, and one was a queen, and one was a shepherdess on the green." The lyrics go to a sing-songy tune, and of course they almost invite the wearing of costumes, which made this particular hymn a regular feature at the annual children's service. But many years later, I still love to sing this song, because in contrast to the canonical saints of the Catholic Church, it insists that the saints of God are everyday people. Some might become famous for their lives of faith and service in the church, but most will not. Some may have extraordinary job titles and life narratives, but others will spend their days doing what might be considered boring or monotonous things. Some saints are men and others not. The important thing I learned about the saints of God from this hymn is that they lived and they died in the love of Christ. And they did die. In the second stanza, we learn that one was a soldier and one was a priest and one was slain by a fierce wild beast. And there's not any reason, no, not the least, why I shouldn't be one too. Which is scary stuff, but then again, no one said the saints of God are immune from big trouble in this world, only the next. I've known Walt and Ginny, I've known Walt and by proxy Ginny for about 5 years, but I have never met Walt in person until this meeting. We've exchanged emails on a semi-regular basis, and Walt can tell you just how semi, and would probably question my use of regular entirely. In any case, he's been my chief correspondent and critic regarding the content of God and Nature magazine since the day we launched the first full issue in spring 2012. In addition to his wondrous essays, Walt has been known to send me a recap of the most recent magazine from his editorial point of view, noting strengths, weaknesses, and linguistic infelicities. Walt and Ginny are true professionals, and they don't miss much, and I think they might even know most of the rules for English grammar and punctuation. But in all these years, I never got a bill for the work they contributed, only unwavering grace and generosity and love, sprinkled with encouragement, the occasional platitude, and indefatigable affirmations of my worth and importance in the eyes of God. And I have never known what I did to deserve such praise and thanksgiving from such kind and intelligent people, such intense and real affection from folks who, on account of the miles between us, might just as easily have considered me a stranger. Sending a letter is a beautiful thing, and in the ancient world, the apostles wrote letters to emerging communities of faith, offering advice and guidance, and these same words have been handed down to us across the ages to inform our faith. Walt and Ginny Hearn have been generously and workfully disseminating their friendship and wisdom to young scholars, missionaries, and pastors across the globe in the form of published essays and private letters for more years than I've been alive. Like the saints of old, they are passionate in their encouragement to others and careful in the counsel they offer. I can think of precious few Christian undertakings more powerful and important than the penning of epistles, as Walt and Ginny do. And in my life, I know no one more prolific in this act than they are. Walt and Ginny's letters have been a lifeline for me. I am a person prone to depression, to thoughts of irrelevance and unworthiness concerning my value as a writer, editor, academic, or even as a saint of God. I have been on the brink of drafting my letter of resignation only to receive a completely spontaneous note from Walt telling me about life at the Troll House in Berkeley. The death of a beloved cat, struggles with cancer, words of comfort in the handling of life's minor tragedies, and of course, his anticipation about the upcoming edition of God and Nature magazine, which meant that it was late. I rarely know how to respond to such kindnesses, to the transparency of heart and compassion with which Walt's electronic missives vibrate in the unreal reality of the World Wide Web. It's a gift he seems to give so naturally that it would almost pass noticing, except that my archive mailbox is full of his words of encouragement because I rarely delete them. Maybe someday after the copyright expires, I'll publish some excerpts from the epistles of Walt Hearn to Emily R. for future saints to pore over in a time of needed love and levity. I'm going to close with one of the contributions to the latest edition of God and Nature magazine, which is a prayer tribute to Walt and Ginny from Paul Fader, who I've also never met. It goes, and you can pray with me now. Lord of the star fields, universe maker, creator of energies, spaces, times, and all things beautiful. Hallelujah. Holy are the galaxies, holy the suns and the planets, holy the dark matter and the dark energy. Holy even are the violent and terrifying mysteries of your cosmos. Holy the life of all creatures in all places, creatures who are blessed by you and whom you delight and those who bear your image. Holy the sun and holy the moon. Holy the light, holy the darkness. Holy the singing, holy the silence. Holy the chaos. Holy the order. Holy the waters, holy the spirit. Holy the first microbes. Holy the fishes. Holy the earth and all of its creatures. Holy the life that flies in the sky. Holy the redwoods. Holy the whales. Holy the mountains. Holy the forest streams. Holy the wild. Holy the human. Holy your word. Holy this word of life. Ancient of days, eternal and incarnate one, holy and blessed is your creation. Holy are you. Amen. Which, if you leave early, you can probably steal a piece. But after this whole session, it'll be just right outside, and we invite you to just share and telling Walt thank you in person and enjoying some sweetness at that time. And I've got a little something for you as a little well, it's a bunch of people's contributions to all of that.
And when do you want to do that?
Right after this whole session ends.
Okay, don't go away. We've got time for a couple of questions for Emily. It's not the kind of a talk that you could actually question, sort of. It's kind of
I'll take those offline. You can email me.
We all feel warm and fuzzy, so how do you ask questions? Nevertheless, if we're getting warm and fuzzy questions, you have a chance. Yes?
Has the ASA ever considered, say, publishing the best of the best of time nature as an imprint magazine that all the ESCF subscribers can enjoy?
No, but I bet we're considering it now.
Just in case nobody, not everybody heard the question, which would be.
Mike was wondering if we've ever considered publishing the best of the best as an actual printed piece, which maybe since we're coming up on a 5-year edition, we'd be able to do that. But I am loath to pick those pieces. I've tried to do it once and received dubious praise from Walt on that effort. So maybe we could get a board together to look through the material and really see what's worthy for something like that.
So this is a tribute, Emily's talk is a tribute to Walt and Jenny Hearn, but at the same time, it's a tribute to you, and we thank you for your work on the